From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Joining me on the program is Akmal Dawi, Digital Managing Editor in VOA's Afghan Service. Our guest on this edition of the program is Ambassador Ronald E. Newman, former U.S. Ambassador to Afghanistan, currently President of the American Academy of Diplomacy. Ambassador Newman is a distinguished U.S. diplomat who has served in numerous senior posts, both overseas and in the United States. Formerly a Deputy Assistant Secretary of State in the Bureau of Near East Affairs, Ambassador Newman served three times as ambassador to Algeria, Bahrain, and finally to Afghanistan from July 2005 to April 2007. He served in Baghdad shortly after the 2003 U.S.-led invasion of Iraq. Earlier in his career, he served in the UAE, Yemen, and Iran. Ambassador Newman's very first posting was in Senegal. On this edition of the program, we will focus specifically on the current political situation in Afghanistan and prospects for stability in the year ahead. In late December 2018, U.S. media reports indicated that U.S. President Donald Trump wanted to begin withdrawing half of America's troops in the country. The White House has since contradicted any reports of a U.S. troop drawdown. However, mere talk of equivocation has called into question the president's commitment to the 17-year-old war in Afghanistan. It may also have undermined efforts by U.S. Special Envoy for Afghanistan, Zalmay Khalilzad, to spur peace talks with the Taliban. Ambassador Newman is the author of a memoir, Three Embassies, Four Wars, a personal memoir, and The Other War, Winning and Losing in Afghanistan. He has returned to Afghanistan repeatedly and is the author of a number of monographs, articles, and editorials. So we'll talk with Ambassador Newman about U.S. policy toward Afghanistan and what the talk of shifting positions may portend for the stability of that war-torn, strategically located country. Ambassador Ronald Newman joins us here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
And I'm also delighted to welcome my colleague Akmal Dawi from our Afghan service.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Ambassador Newman, before we begin, I wanted you to talk about your specific history in Afghanistan. You have a very deep connection to the country. I believe your father was also ambassador.
My father was ambassador from 1967 to 73. My wife and I first went to Afghanistan in 67. I was just out of graduate school, about to enlist in the U.S. Army, but had several months before reporting for duty. So being old enough to travel on our own and unemployed enough to be free to do so, we traveled all over Afghanistan in that period when we were visiting, driving all the way across the center of the country with Afghan and American colleagues, going up into the Pamirs in the far northeast by jeep first, then by horse along the Amu Dara, and then by yak up into the Pamirs. So we really saw a great deal of the country at a wonderful time when it was still essentially at peace.
Well, that leads me to then ask you about the current situation. 17 years of war since the U.S.-led invasion in late 2001 to crush the Taliban regime. We still haven't reached a point of stability. On-again, off-again talk about whether U.S. troops should draw down, contradictions. How do you see the situation?
It's very complex. Anybody can make a war. It takes at least two to make a peace. In Afghanistan, it probably takes four or five because of the involvement of Pakistan across the border. And now you have other players. You have the Russians involved. You have the Iranians involved. Of course, you have us involved. And then you have the Afghan government and the Taliban. So I think I'm up to five or six there. That's a complex scenario. The United States is more actively pushing for a peace settlement than it has for some time. But it is doing it at a time of weakness in several respects, which, well, I would say you should wait for this sitting down.
Let me turn to my colleague Akmal for a question.
I absolutely agree with Ambassador Newman that it's a sign of weakness. What we read about Afghanistan is that the United States is showing weakness and that the president, by indicating that he's willing to withdraw and at a time that his envoy for talks with Taliban is undertaking some crucial missions, this happens to, in the eyes of a lot of Afghans and observers, would indicate that the United States is negotiating from a position of weakness. This is against what we were hearing over the last 15 years, that negotiations should be conducted from a position of power. Over the years, what the United States did was to actually crush the Taliban and force them to change their position and to believe that they cannot win militarily, and ultimately there is a political settlement. Now it appears that, unfortunately, the United States is in search of a withdrawal and that the Taliban actually have proven that they are in the position of power.
I think there is something to that. The signal that we might leave is obviously, to my mind, a bad one. Taliban essentially don't want to negotiate with the Afghan government. They want only to negotiate with the American government about the Americans leaving. I think one can assume that their view of what they would do with the Afghan government afterwards is not about negotiations. But in any event, this suggests that they could get something for free that otherwise might be a subject of negotiations. I think this is a very bad move because Taliban have problems of their own. One of the problems is internal differences within the movement. And so it's very hard to see why their Taliban leadership would have an argument within its own ranks about making any concessions for peace if it looks like it can get concessions from the Americans for free without making reciprocal conditions. I think it's a bad step. I do think there is something here which Afghan leaders need to focus on themselves. Whether it is as quick as President Trump suggests, not so quick, now at some point America is going to reduce. Afghanistan needs a strong government. It has a weak government now. It is about to have a presidential election. If it does the presidential election like the last one, great many candidates, everybody fighting for themselves, probably a lot of fraud, and then a political crisis, that may well be the end of the American involvement. That could really be the excuse President Trump really needs to leave. So I think Afghan politicians need to think very hard about whether they can bring themselves to come together a bit more and whether they can actually conduct a halfway decent election.
That's a very good point, Mr. Ambassador, because we talk so much about the Taliban and what an impediment they are to peace and stability. But as you said, the Afghan government itself is also a problem. Why is it that they can't somehow unify or rid the country of corruption, which seems to be a major problem?
Well, I suppose because they're like a great many other governments all over the world, made up of individuals who would like to do something for themselves. I mean, even the United States is not exactly immune from corruption. But remember, Afghanistan's been at war for 40 years, not 18. This is a climate in which uncertainty is the rule of people's lives. And so from an individual point of view, trying to do what you can for yourself, get what you can while you can, is actually very logical. It leads to a kind of runaway corruption at times, leads to rapacious corruption. And that's really where it gets out of hand, is when you take everything and build nothing. We had corruption in the United States in many of our big cities with political networks for hundreds of years. But the bridges they built still stand. You can still drive on them. So they took their piece, but they did something. When you have corruption that builds nothing, it's very destroying. But that's a pretty much a natural phenomenon that when people have lived all their lives with insecurity. So war is the normal for a great many people. And out of that, you get this climate, but you also get short-term leadership.
To me, what puzzles me sometimes is that this idea of Afghanization of the conflict. I think the Afghan war is not an entirely Afghan problem. You would see to the facts like last year in 2018, you had over 6,000 U.S. military airstrikes in Afghanistan. That's five times more than the Afghan nascent Air Force conducted airstrikes. The United States is actively engaged in maintaining this conflict. It's militarily, politically, economically. And when it comes to peacemaking, the United States would step back and say, hey, Afghans, you should sort out this problem. While in the eyes of a lot of Afghans, the United States owns the situation. We built this government with the assistance of the United States. It has a moral, legal obligation to stay the course and to help us solve this. If the Taliban is unwilling to talk to the Afghan government, then would the United States just stop the negotiations? Then the war should continue? That's the stalemate that has hit to the eyes of many Afghans, the mission of Zalmay Khalilzad, the envoy. He's insisting that the Taliban should talk to the Afghan government. The Taliban refuse to do, and they want the United States to be part of the negotiation. This is inflicting a lot of problems for the Afghan people.
I think there is one small misstatement there. Remember, I'm not in the government. I don't speak for the American government. But as far as I know, the American government is not at all refusing to be a part of the talks, but they are insisting that the main negotiation has to be between the Taliban and the Afghan, who have to live with each other, have to make peace with each other. America will certainly have to be part of that negotiation, but it cannot substitute. What the Taliban wants is not a peace negotiation. They want a negotiation about America's departure. I think that is something that I don't think many Afghans on the non-Taliban side want the United States to do. I don't think they want the United States just to negotiate for its own withdrawal and leave Afghanistan on its own. But the Afghan government can't make the Taliban negotiate with them. They can make a stronger and more honest government. And that's up to Afghans. Afghans have to take responsibility for a certain number of things. Better governance is one of them. I think, after all, the Taliban are Afghans also, for all their foreign backing. They're not 10 feet tall, but they're outperforming much of the Afghan military. That's a function of leadership.
When you talk about foreign backing, let's talk about who's backing the Taliban.
How much time do you have?
and to what extent do they have leverage, and do they have the same goal of bringing them and the Afghan government to the table for a political settlement?
The Taliban find sanctuary in Pakistan. They certainly have had a measure of political support in Pakistan. Many Afghans believe that the Taliban are controlled by the Pakistanis. I think that is an incorrect assumption. I think Pakistanis have an enormous amount of influence, but their ability to force the Taliban to make a peace, that is in question. It's also in question exactly what Pakistan's interests are. Does it really want a government that's controlled by the Taliban? Does it simply want Taliban influence? I don't know. One person argued with me the other day that actually Pakistan has very little interest in the Taliban coming to power, because if they ever come to power, then they'll be an Afghan government like every other Afghan government, which has historically always been a problem for Pakistan. So we don't quite know. You have other players. The Iranians are now beginning to give some aid to the Taliban, certainly contacts. The Russians are giving aid. In both cases, those are reversals of historical positions, and they seem to be driven primarily by worries about the Islamic State, Daesh, coming into Afghanistan, and by worries that the United States will collapse.
We'll have more in just a moment, but first, you're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guest is Ambassador Ronald Newman. He's a distinguished American diplomat who served most recently as U.S. Ambassador to Afghanistan. Currently, he is president of the American Academy of Diplomacy. And joining me on the program is Akmal Dawi, digital managing editor in VOA's Afghan service. I'm Carol Castiel. This is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel VOA. Well, here's a big shout out to a loyal radio and Facebook fan, Abdikadir Ismail from Mogadishu, Somalia. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to PCUSA@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to our special guest in our conversation about Afghanistan. Ambassador Newman, here's a basic question for you. Do you think a political settlement can be reached between the Afghan government and Taliban, or are there simply irreconcilable differences, political and ideological ones, at root?
There are big differences. I think solution is possible. You've seen an enormous outpouring of sentiment in Afghanistan for a peace settlement when you had a brief ceasefire. That showed that there was interest in Taliban fighters as well as in Afghan civilians. But whether the Taliban are actually prepared to make a peace, that you can't know until you actually enter detailed negotiations. They say lots of good words about leaving room for rights of women, for education, other things. You know, you just don't know what these things mean until you try to get down to detail. So I think it's a mistake to say you can't make peace or to refuse, which frankly is something we did for a while. But I think you also have to go in understanding that you might not succeed. You have to keep working on the military side as well, first of all, because the degree to which you have a stalemate or don't is going to influence negotiations. And secondly, every agreement in Afghanistan's recent past has been broken. So the strength of the military is going to be an important element of guaranteeing that a peace agreement is kept if you ever get to one.
What about the fact that only 55% of the territory is under Afghan government control and just about 65% of the population? That doesn't really bode well for leverage on the Afghan side.
It's not a good situation. It's declining. At the same time, as long as we're there, the Taliban is never going to succeed in finally winning. So yes, they have more territory, but no, it does not give them any path they can see to victory. So they, too, have to deal with a certain level of frustration.
In the eyes of some Afghans, and in particular the Taliban, the same scenario is repeating itself. The United States is leaving Afghanistan, and again, the history would repeat itself. The Mujahideen will win another war, and another crusader is defeated, and then they will reestablish the Islamic Emirate that they had. Convincing them at this stage, you know, when they have clients in Moscow, in Tehran, in Islamabad, and the whole region is talking to the Taliban, don't you think that the world has lost that opportunity to convince Taliban to sit and agree with the Afghan government for a political solution?
Maybe. I certainly agree that Mr. Trump's talking about withdrawal strengthens Taliban position. On the other hand, the Taliban have to deal with several things. One is they have believed several times that we were going. They believed it. We were going to go in 2011 after Obama's first policy. They believed we were going to be gone in 2014. We're still there. Secondly, they go to a lot of funerals, too. They're burying a lot of Taliban. Finally, remember that while we are still there, we're there in a very small number now. There's not 100,000 American soldiers on the ground. There's about 15,000, and many of them are in bases or in training capacities. So there is a question among Taliban fighters also, why are we doing this? You know, is this jihad if most of the foreigners are gone and we're simply fighting other Afghans for power? So they have other pressures on them. Some of them will stick for victory. Some of them, I think, really want a peace. But the question is, what peace do they want? And you can't find out unless you can get to talks and test it. And so you have to fight and talk at the same time. This was something the Israeli late Prime Minister Rabin understood very well. He was asked once, how can you negotiate with terrorists and fight terrorism? And he said, I have to fight terrorism as though there are no negotiations. I have to negotiate as though there is no fighting. You have to keep them separate and do both.
So, Mr. Ambassador, even though for now the talk about a potential U.S. troop withdrawal has been somehow tamped down, we're never far from that possibility because Mr. Trump, we know, would like to bring all troops home. He talked about Syria.
We weren't very far from that possibility with Mr. Obama, frankly. I mean, he wasn't quite as outspoken, but Obama wasted an enormous amount of his political influence in Afghanistan for the entire 8 years of his presidency by constantly setting deadlines and looking like we were going to leave. He wasn't as erratic as Mr. Trump, but the net effect was the same.
You know, I was listening to President Karzai. He was talking in New Delhi today, the former Afghan president, and he was actually repeating what he said.
Yeah, that the Americans will stay.
The Americans would stay. Yeah. They would not leave. They would just brag about withdrawal, but the strategic interests that they have in the region would necessitate them to stay longer. Do you think that might be a fact?
First of all, I know President Karzai deeply believes that. I think there is a view inside parts of the U.S. government that thinks we need some kind of counterterrorist ability to operate in Afghanistan. I do not think there is a political decision to keep bases. President Karzai does believe that. He and I have talked about it. He sees a deep state with a deep belief that we want military bases for all time. First of all, I think that question has never actually been discussed inside the U.S. government. I know Afghans couldn't possibly believe this, but it's one of those questions that, in fact, never will be discussed until we come face to face with the question in a peace negotiation or post-war situation, because you will have those in the bureaucracy who want to stay and those who feel we should leave, a lot of American political pressure to leave. And that kind of question never gets decided inside a government as a matter of theory. It only gets decided when you actually have to make a decision.
Mr. Ambassador, earlier you brought up Daesh or ISIS. How would you characterize their presence in Afghanistan? To what extent do they pose as much of a threat, if not more of a threat, than the Taliban?
They are not as great a threat, but they are a serious threat. They have installed themselves in the south, east, in the west, to some extent in the north. There are only a few foreign fighters, as far as we know. Most of those that are calling themselves Daesh at this point are Afghans, many of them former Taliban, but they have some foreign fighters. There is a potential for a lot more people to come from outside, for them to reconstitute the Islamic State there if they win. They're not huge, but they are very tough, and they've been attacked by both Taliban and Afghan government forces, and they have not been wiped out, which is a sign of the enough strength to be a serious threat.
And I mean, one would argue that for President Trump to declare that ISIS is defeated in Syria and thereby he's withdrawing American troops from the region, ISIS has not been defeated in Afghanistan, so he would double his efforts to eradicate ISIS. Because what we have is that last year, actually, the UN reported the number of Afghans killed by this so-called Islamic State group in Afghanistan increased to 900. So the Islamic State has a radio station in the east of Afghanistan, despite the fact that the president authorized the use of mother-of-all bombs on their hideouts in the east of Afghanistan. The group is still active. It strikes the capital of Afghanistan. And now when we talk about the defeat of ISIS, you have a strong ISIS in Afghanistan. And how could you withdraw troops while this terror organization is expanding?
I think it's a perfectly valid question. Unfortunately, you have to ask Mr. Trump and not me. I think it makes no sense for us to withdraw from Afghanistan, leaving the Taliban, which is still allied with al-Qaeda, and now with Daesh, and just to say, I'm tired, I'm going home.
Now, you talked earlier about Russia, Iran, of course, Pakistan, that Russia and Iran are sort of supporting the Taliban against ISIS, Daesh. Where do they fit into this picture of peace talks? Do U.S. interests converge or mostly diverge with those of Iran and Russia in Afghanistan?
I think Russia and Iran do have interests in a peace. I think they're more skeptical about whether it can happen, but they have an interest. Their ability to do anything about that interest is fairly limited. The Iranians, for instance, worrying about Islamic State, are supplying some support to the Taliban. You shouldn't get too carried away with this. I mean, I was in Iraq when the Iranians were putting in support for Shia militia groups in Iraq. That's a whole different scale of what they could do. And the fact that they're not doing so much of that tells you that this is a small program for political interest. It's not an all-out support for the Taliban to win a war. It's to have a relationship so that if the Americans pull out, they got to have somebody who's on their side. So they'll support them. They'll probably support the Hazara movements in the center of Afghanistan that are Shia as well, as they did before. They will play the game. The Russians have a similar interest. They're talking to the Taliban. They say they're not giving weapons. Again, they have an interest in peace, but they don't control anything. They don't have the leverage to demand that the Taliban or the Afghan government or the Americans actually make the peace.
What about the role of Saudi Arabia and the UAE in these peace talks?
They obviously have a lot of money, which is always a good thing, and they're willing to convene the peace talks. I don't think they have a lot of special leverage. But the Taliban have very strong relations with Qatar, where they have had an office open now for a number of years. And there's a lot of strain between the Qataris and the Saudis. So the Taliban can be a little nervous about how much they work with the Saudis. So you have so many different factors to make this really complicated.
What do you think about the consensus that you would like to have in relations with Afghanistan? I mean, for the past 17 years, the American engagement with Afghanistan had this regional support, at least on the face of it. The United States could not have conducted so many military operations inside Afghanistan without Russia on board, at least, or opening sometimes a northern supply line. The Iranians were not subversive to a large extent. Now, when there is talks for peace, you would see the Russians trying to have their own corner, the Moscow Forum, where the United States refused to participate. And then you have the Americans sitting with the Saudis, sitting on a separate side and saying, here we are talking here. I don't quite understand why these countries, who apparently all have an interest in fighting terrorism, in fighting drugs in Afghanistan, and having a stable Afghanistan, it's to the interest of everybody. Why they cannot all come together and say, hey, we're all talking to the Taliban.
I can explain it, but I can't make you wrong. So the Americans don't want to talk to the Iranians. The Russians are mad because we kept the Russians out in what was called the Kabul process. The Russians want to show that they're a major player. United States is not very happy with the Russians. Russians are not very happy with us. So, you know, it's a little bit like a lot of small children in some respects. But that would make more sense for all of us to talk together is probably true. It's hard to get past people's politics to do that. And you see that in Afghanistan, too. I mean, you have groups that think you shouldn't be making peace with the Taliban that are very worried about it. The new interior minister in Afghanistan believes very strongly that you can't possibly negotiate peace with the Taliban. You've got contradictions everywhere. Would it make sense to come together? Yes, I think it would make sense to come together. Do I think this is going to happen anytime soon? Probably not.
And unfortunately, as we close, Mr. Ambassador, what would you advise the U.S. government to do at this point to try to move forward in Afghanistan to foster stability? And if not, what are the consequences? There are so many deleterious consequences probably for stalemate.
Unfortunately, the thing that is most important for the United States to do is what we do least well, is to stick to one course of action for a long period of time. Because when you think about it, what did the Pakistanis have to believe in order to believe that peace makes sense instead of supporting the Taliban? They have to believe that we're not going to leave without peace. As long as we're going to leave a mess, then the Pakistanis, from the point of view of their own interest, have reasons not to change their policy. The Russians and the Iranians have either are dealing from an assumption that America will leave, you'll have chaos in Afghanistan, you'll have the Islamic State, Daesh, and so they need allies. If you want them not to believe that, then they have to believe that the United States will have a steady course. And that's true for the Afghan government as well. So what you need above all else is for us to keep the policy we had and just shut up and get on with it while negotiating for peace, trying for peace, but keeping a steady course. This seems to be very hard for us to do. You know, every 6 months or a year or 2 years, we think we have to have a policy review and we have to change everything. And when we do that, we make everybody uncertain about what we're really doing. What will happen if Afghanistan falls apart, if we leave? You could well have a long civil war if we leave, as you did when the Soviets left. You might not. It's also possible that you have a much quicker victory of the Taliban, simply because if you look at Afghan history, most of the changes were not in big battles, but when people decided that something was changing, reached a kind of tipping point, and people changed sides. And that was true a number of times. So you could also have the situation, if we left, that people would decide the Taliban are going to win and they switch sides. I think less likely, but it's possible. You would probably still have a degree of civil war. You've got the Islamic State, Daesh there, you've got the Taliban, you've got Al-Qaeda, you've got various forces. You'd have forces backed by Iran and by Russia. They'd all be fighting. You would have the independence movements, guerrilla movements of various Central Asian states, like the Islamic movement of Uzbekistan working out of there. You've got Uyghur movements working into China. You would have a rear area now for some of the most radical groups in Pakistan. So I think you would have a very high chance of seeing a great deal of instability spread out of Afghanistan and into sort of a circle around Afghanistan, Central Asia. That's a very dangerous thing, and I think it's one of the things we should think about when we are in such a hurry to leave.
So stay the course, airstrikes, troop levels the same.
And negotiations. No, you don't always need to get troop levels the same. I think as the Afghan Air Force comes up somewhat, as the Afghan military performance improves, you should be able to reduce. And I don't think you absolutely have to have every one of 15,000 right now. You could probably pull it down 1,000 enough, but you just don't have to make a big deal out of it.
Okay. Ambassador Ronald Newman is a distinguished American diplomat who served most recently as U.S. Ambassador to Afghanistan. He's currently president of the American Academy of Diplomacy. Mr. Ambassador, thank you for taking time to come in and sharing your very valuable insights on Afghanistan.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington. Our engineer was Justin Thwaites, and joining me on the program was Akmal Dawi, Digital Managing Editor in VOA's Afghan Service. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.